Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of the show is Life in Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen so you can take some notes during the show. Let's first look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. As the recession continues and the economy is struggling, nationwide tax revolt is predicted to be coming. City, states, and municipalities have a huge budget problem. That problem is caused by too much spending. The sensible thing to do would be to try to reduce expenditures. However, cities are turning to fees to fill budget gaps. For example, after her sport utility vehicle sideswiped a van in early February, Shirley Kimmel was amazed at how quickly a handful of police officers and firefighters in Winter Haven, Florida showed up. But a real shock came a week later when a letter arrived from the city billing her $316 for the cost of responding to the accident. I remember thinking, what the heck is this, says Ms. Kimmel, 67, an office manager at a furniture store. I always thought this sort of thing was covered by my taxes. It used to be, but last July, Winter Haven, Florida became one of a few dozen cities in the country to charge accident response fees. The idea is to shift the expense of tending to and cleaning up crashes directly to at-fault drivers. Either they or their insurers are expected to pay. With the economy flailing and budgets strained, state and local governments are being creative about ways to raise money. And the go-to idea is to invent a fee or simply raise one. Ohio's governor has proposed a budget with more than 150 new or increased fees, including a five-fold increase in the cost to renew a livestock license, as well as larger sums to register a car, order a birth certificate, or dump trash in a landfill. Other fees taken aim at landlords, cigarette sellers, and hospitals, to name a few. Wisconsin's Governor James E. Doyle has proposed a charge on slaughterhouses that would be levied on the basis of each animal slaughtered. Washington's Mayor Adrian M. Fenty has proposed a streetlight user fee of $4.25 a month to be added to electric bills that would cover the cost of operating and maintaining the city's streetlights. New York City recently expanded its anti-idling law to include anyone parked near a school who leaves the engine running for more than a minute. Doing that will cost you $100. The accident response fee idea could spread too. A company in Dayton, Ohio, called the Cost Recovery Corporation, specializes in setting up collection systems for municipalities that bill for police and fire responses. The company keeps 10% of the billings. Inquiries have tripled in the last year, says the company's president, Regina Moore. The tax capital of the world. In a game of leapfrog between New York and California, once again, New York has the dubious honor as the tax capital of the world. Like the old competition to have the world's tallest building, New York can't resist having the nation's highest taxes. So after California raised its top income tax rate to 10.55% last month, Albany's politicians leapt into action to reclaim high tax honors. Maybe C-SPAN can make this tax competition a new reality TV series. Carla Bruni, the First Lady of France, could host. they can invite politicians from the at least 10 other states that are also considering major tax hikes, including Oregon, Illinois, Wisconsin, Washington, Arizona, and New Jersey. In New York, Assembly Speaker and de facto Governor Sheldon Silver and other Democrats will impose a 2 percentage point millionaire tax on New Yorkers who earn more than $200,000 a year, $300,000 for couples. This will lift the top state tax rate to 8.97% and the New York City rate to 12.62%. Since capital gains and dividends are taxed as ordinary income, New York will impose the nation's highest taxes on investment income at a time when Wall Street is in jeopardy of losing its status as the world's financial capital. Mr. Silver says of the coming tax hikes, "We've done it before. There hasn't been a catastrophe." The response is, "Oh, really?" According to Census Bureau data, over the past decade, 1.97 million New Yorkers left the state for greener pastures, the biggest exodus of any state. New York City has lost more than 75,000 jobs since last August, and many industrial areas upstate are as run down as Detroit. The American Legislative Exchange Council recently said New York had the worst economic outlook of all 50 states, including Michigan. And that analysis was done before these $4 billion in new taxes. How does Mr. Silver define catastrophe? In New York, this is advertised as a plan of shared sacrifice, but the group that is most responsible for New York's budget woes, the all-powerful public employee unions, somehow walk out of this with a 3% pay increase. The state is receiving an estimated $10 billion in federal stimulus money, and Democrats are spending every cent while raising the state budget by 9%. Then they insist with a straight face that taxes are the only way to close the budget deficit. Taxing your way into a deeper hole? Cities and states are taxing themselves into an ever-deepening hole. It is fiscally irresponsible to do anything but shrink government salaries and privatize all services that cannot be eliminated. Let's look at Vallejo, California. The unions of Vallejo, California got part of what they have coming when a judge ruled Vallejo can void union contracts. Not surprisingly, a self-serving website sponsored by Vallejo Police Officers Association, Firefighters Local 1186, and IBEW Local 2376 is pleading the case for raising taxes so they can receive ridiculous, unjustified salaries and pensions at taxpayer expense. With all this, what we see is taxpayer resentment is growing. Resentment towards unjustified property taxes, sales taxes, income taxes, and fees is building. At some point, we just do not know when, there is probably going to be a massive taxpayer revolt to throw the bums out, privatize services, and end the powerful grip public unions have on our lives. Private pension plans have gone the way of the dinosaur. It's long overdue that public-sponsored pension plans and public unions follow suit. All of this is from Mike Shedlock at globaleconomicanalysis.blogspot.com. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now let's go to the second section of the show, where we're going to again point out things that can help you personally in your financial situation dealing with debt and those conceivable woes of debt, but also overcoming them and making sure that you can be as stable as possible in the current economy. As is always, I give an important credit because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tiaki, two of America's leading champions for debtors. And I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. Also, you can visit the Life and Debt archives at www.kruufm.com. to listen to past shows, and to get a complete education of what Professor Warren and her daughter Amelia have been teaching us. Last week, I was talking about getting the cheapest mortgage and reshopping a mortgage if you have one, or getting one for the first time. The whole concept here is being in a position to get a house where it is a financially stable starting point for you. One of the biggest things that I see as an attorney is how people get into these mortgage closings, actually before that, even the shopping phase and planning stage, and they're really not prepared or preparing for the situation with proper representation in particular. What we were discussing was getting the cheapest mortgage, and you think, well, you made an offer on the house, we prepared you for the things to look at about getting the house, and the seller has agreed to that offer, so your shopping is over, perhaps in your mind, but actually it's just beginning, because the mortgages that you're going to get, and hopefully it's only one mortgage, not two mortgages, is at least as important as the price of your home, and maybe even more so, because you can knock off some money from the home sales price and then just carelessly get into a mortgage situation where over the life of your mortgage you're paying tens of thousands of dollars more on the mortgage itself. So that's not so wise. Getting the best price may sound obvious, but many people do end up paying high price mortgages for the simple reason that they really didn't shop hard enough for a better mortgage. And it is a fact that at least half of all the people who signed up for high-priced mortgages could have gotten a low-priced mortgage if they had only shopped harder. So the technique is to do some shopping. No matter how fantastic the first quote seems, get a second quote and keep on getting quotes until, as we suggest, you get at least five, and it doesn't matter if you are pre-approved for the mortgage. You need to make sure that you shop aggressively and pick the best deal. It really is, if you look at an amortization of a mortgage over the life of that loan, too much money at stake to stop short on finding the best possible mortgage. As I discussed, there are a lot of tricks to watch out for when you get a mortgage, so you need to protect yourselves. You need to be careful, very careful. And once you get to that mortgage analysis stage, you have to watch out for fees, points, and other fine print. And as I was discussing last week, there are a list of questions to ask along with answers you want to hear. First one that I discussed was your interest rate. And by law, every mortgage lender must quote you the annual interest rate. And you may also be quoted the annual percentage rate, or APR, which lumps certain fees into the total cost. And once you have the annual interest rate, you can make an apples-to-apples comparison on the interest rate, which is probably the most important part of the loan. And a rule of thumb is, unless you have recently declared bankruptcy or have really bad credit, and we're not talking about a couple of late payments, if somebody wants to charge you more than the average market rate, which is listed in newspaper and available at www.freddiemac.com, then you are probably being sucked into a bad deal. You got to walk away from that one. The second question you need to ask is how many points are on the loan. And a point is just jargon for an extra fee of 1% of the total amount of the mortgage loan. But generally speaking, there's a trade-off between points and interest rate. A loan with fewer points will have a slightly higher interest rate, and vice versa. So if you think you will sell the house or refinance again in the very near future, then your best bet is usually to avoid the points and pay the higher rate. Regardless, however, if you plan to stay in your house, you should steer clear of any mortgage that charges more than 1 to 2 points. Don't assume that all the big lenders charge about the same fees. This is completely inaccurate. There's a huge range here, and the brokers are playing a lot of games, at least had been, with these point situations. And the third thing, the third question you want to ask is, what are the closing costs, origination costs, and other fees? You need to ask for a good faith estimate of the closing, origination, and other costs. And then you use this information when you do your comparison shopping. If the fees are very large, or if the estimate is in a range that is really too wide to be useful, then you need to walk away. That's not a company you can trust for the next 30 years, presuming, of course, that they're not just going to securitize the loan and sell it the next day anyway. However, I suspect that less and less of that will be happening in the current economic climate. The next question you're going to ask is, how long is the payoff period? The typical mortgage payoff period traditionally has been 30 years. If someone tries to steer you to a 40-year loan or an interest-only loan where you never pay off your mortgage, you need to go in the other direction. In fact, I would suggest that you run in the other direction. This is not a winning scenario for people. And if you have a relatively short time left to pay on your mortgage, 15 years or less, don't get sucked into a 30-year mortgage. Get a 10-year or a 15-year loan if you're going to refinance. Lower monthly payments are great, but not at the cost of keeping you in debt for more years than necessary. And if you actually amortize everything, you aren't saving any money at all. In fact, you're spending a whole lot more money in doing this refinance situation if you already own that house. And the next question you'll ask is this a fixed or variable rate? Very important question. If the rates are low, then it is a good idea to lock in the rate for as long as you plan to live in your house. You will be paying slightly more for a fixed rate loan, but the security is worth it. The rate on a variable loan can go up at any time. If you think you will stay in the house for the rest of your life, get a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. If you're pretty sure you will move on to the next few years, you might consider a mortgage that is just for the first 5 or 7 years, which tends to be cheaper than a 30-year fixed rate loan. But be wary, particularly in the current economy, these ARMs, adjustable rate mortgages, which end at the end of 5 or 7 year period, can give you low rates to start out with, but they're very tricky. And as we've seen in the last couple of years, there's been a lot of manipulation and real confusion in the way these things are set up. And they're really traps in a very conscious way by the lender for many people. And as a rule of thumb, you just stay away from any adjustable rate mortgage that lasts less than 5 years. The risk that rates will rise while you're still living there is just way too high, particularly, again, in the current economy. And if you're not really sure whether you'll move or stay put, your safest bet is still a 30-year fixed loan. It costs a little more, but 30 years of being in that kind of position is a very comfortable scenario, because you've got it figured out right from the start. And you're not praying and hoping that the future economy is going to support you. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Another question you want to ask then, in looking at this loan situation for your home, is there a balloon payment? If the answer is yes, then for you, the answer should be no. A balloon payment is a giant payment that will be required of you at some point in the future on top of your usual monthly payments. These can be notorious scams that have cost countless homeowners tens of thousands of dollars in extra fees, and many have even lost their homes. So stay away from balloon payments generally. Is there a prepayment penalty? Again, if the answer is yes, for you the answer should be no. If you need to sell your home or want to refinance to obtain a better rate in the future, A prepayment penalty leaves you at the mercy of your mortgage company, paying extra for the privilege of paying off your loan. Not a good idea. The next question then is there a yield spread premium or a YSP? This is industry speak for the kickback that gets paid to brokers for steering you into a bad deal, believe that or not. Ask if the loan has a YSP. Frankly, if the answer is yes, for you, the answer should be no. And if you can't get a straight answer, then just go away. Don't take this loan. These people aren't people you want to deal with. And then a final question is, do I have to take out private mortgage insurance or PMI? Now, when you buy a home with a small down payment, less than 20% of the purchase price, most lenders require that you take on private mortgage insurance. If you get in trouble and the bank forecloses, the PMI will pay the mortgage company off, but it doesn't benefit you and it doesn't help you to hold on to your home. So it's really only there to help the mortgage lender, not you. If the lender tells you that you have to buy PMI, try another lender. If you have built up some equity and your credit is good, some lenders will waive the PMI requirement even if you haven't hit the magical 20% down payment mark. If the PMI is a must, then be sure to ask what the cost is and use this as part of your comparison shopping, because it's going to be a monthly cost and it could be a big cost for you. If the lender tells you that your loan includes single premium PMI, then definitely don't take that deal. Single premium PMI charges you an upfront single premium for a period of coverage, typically 5 years, which you have to pay even if you sell the house. Single premium mortgage insurance is such a ripoff that several consumer groups have advocated outlawing it altogether. But it's still out there, so be careful. Now, that was a list of very important questions that you want to ask and the answers you want to hear when you're dealing with getting a mortgage, either for a new home or a refinance mortgage. And also a few important points. Remember to arm yourself before you call. I've gone over this in the past. Make sure you have a credit report that you know about. You can clean it up yourself. You don't need to hire somebody to do that, but that's a very important thing for you. You need to gather your own financial information, your pay stubs, your tax returns, your bank statements, and you have all that information, and it can get you a more accurate quote at the time that you apply. You can also find out your current mortgage balance if you're doing a refinancing by asking for a payoff statement from the bank. And again, if you are refinancing, you need to learn how much your house is worth, the loan to value amount, which is a ratio that the bank wants to know because they want to see how much equity is in your house when they are giving you that refinancing loan. And generally, the more equity you have, the better your interest rate. You'll eventually need an official estimate of the value of your house, but having a general sense ahead of time can help you with your shopping. Another important point is to get multiple quotes. Again, we've gone over this many, many times. People just jump at one thing, but you need to really appreciate how expensive this whole deal is going to be for you getting a house. So make sure that you are careful. Also, as I mentioned in the past, never forget that the mortgage broker does not work for you. The mortgage broker, like an insurance broker, gets you price quotes from a lot of different places and gets a commission for the services, and that's great. But mortgage companies often get extra commissions from the lender if they talk you into taking a mortgage with a higher interest rate than what you qualify for. That's right, this kind of a kickback for steering you into what is not the best deal for you. And it's perfectly legal, so you better be aware of that. So just remember that it's your money. You choose which lender you will have for the mortgage, and the broker will tell you that he or she checked with all the banks and that he found you a great deal. But the fact is, mortgage brokers are a lot like car salespersons, and the more you pay, the more they make. So be careful. And again, that doesn't necessarily mean that you should never use a mortgage broker, but there are very reputable mortgage brokers who will give you a perfectly fair quote, and there are some who aren't very reputable or who will steer you into a bad deal if you don't understand what's going on. So be careful. Never count on a single broker, a single website, or just one lender to show you all your options. Get on the phone, get quotes from different sources. If you're not sure, keep asking questions until you have the best possible deal. One thing also is very important is that you do not increase the amount of money you borrow. There are lots of people nowadays who will try to convince you that it's good to take cash out of your home equity and take on a bigger mortgage. Well, the bottom line, both from my personal experience and what the suffering people will tell you, this is not smart, and it's really plainly dangerous nowadays. You are not cashing anything, you are just borrowing money that you will have to pay back someday, and you are doing it in the most dangerous way possible. Because if something goes wrong and you can't pay, the mortgage company gets to take your house away. And this has happened in a very large percentage of all those foreclosures you're reading about in the paper. They weren't original home mortgages, they were refinancing mortgages. So you need to be extraordinarily cautious here. So when you refinance your mortgage, don't let the bank talk you into taking a single dollar of new debt. As an interesting personal spin-off, I have had a client who not only was sucked into this, but because dipping into her equity meant that the monthly payment was beyond her means, the bank tricked her into taking extra money to cover the extra amount of mortgage payment over the next several years. In other words, they gave her another $30,000 to cover the additional $500 she was going to have to pay a month with this new concept in the mortgage, dipping into the equity. Unfortunately, it was an adjustable rate mortgage, and in a very short time, this person was unable to keep up with the monthly mortgage payments and is losing her home. You need to be very, very careful about these kinds of things. And then the final point for the week about getting that mortgage, if you are over 60, are African American or Latino, you need to shop even harder. It's a tough reality that we really don't like to talk much about, but people in these circumstances are specifically targeted for higher priced mortgages and for manipulation in the negotiation side of the deal. This isn't fair, it isn't right, and most of the time it isn't even legal, but the fact is it has happened and it will continue to happen unless we get some regulations and laws in place that can change the outcome when it comes down to the foreclosure time, which is almost inevitable in all of these kinds of loans. So all those were some very important points when you're at the threshold of getting a mortgage. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.